Gregor Piatigorsky is a cellist whose 60-year-old love affair with that instrument has produced some of the most beautiful music heard in this century. Whether he is, as some critics believe, the finest musician alive today, or the world's greatest cellist, is less important than the fact that his supreme mastery of the instrument and his consummate artistry have given pleasure and satisfaction to the many thousands who've heard him. For 50 years, he toured the world in concert and recital and as soloist with every major orchestra. For those years and more, he's been a friend and associate of the greatest names in 20th century music. Much of his life has been devoted to teaching others at the Curtis Institute, UCLA, and most recently at the University of Southern California. And yet he still found the time to write a novel and an autobiography, the latter, incidentally, titled with characteristic directness, Cellist. Piatigorsky, after so many years with the same instrument and a kind of intimate relationship with that instrument, does it get to be an extension of you, or does it have a kind of a life of its own?
No, it's not life of its own.
It doesn't.
It's just me.
Just you.
It's, I think without cello, totally, it will be half of me practically will be dead.
But as you play, it becomes a kind of extension of your own personality in a way?
Oh, yes. That is just my language. I just hope that the cello can express my thought the best. And it is, of course, very tight relationship. You know, sometimes I think that I began to play cello before I was born. The life without cello is unthinkable. It is very, 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 very peculiar. I don't know if it's happened with in any other professions, but the cello is I just recall. I recall that the instrument in itself, it is not just for the sound, let's say. It's a total creation of something that sometimes I think it was created by God. It is unthinkable to think that it was created by a man who made a wooden box, put four strings on it, and then the bow and the people are playing it.
Do you build a special relationship with your own instrument, the one you've used for so many years? You have, of course, a very fine one. What happens when you play someone else's cello? Do you have to get acquainted?
It is not the same, because the cello, I'm lucky enough to have a gorgeous instrument made by Stradivari. Now this cello, of course, has a long history, like almost all famous instruments. About my Stradivari, it is the people who are interested in luthery, they know more about the cello than about me, and each instrument has its name of the last owner or some great instrumentalist who played.
Never the present owner, it's always the last one?
Always the last one. So for instance, my Stradivari, it is not Piatigorsky Stradivari, it is Bata Stradivari. And it was a great French cellist who had it all his life, desperately in love with the instrument. And then he became old, and he had an old servant. he was worried about it all, servants, what would happen to him. And finally he decided to sell the cello. Before, he always refused, although there were some extraordinary offers for it, like one Russian prince gave him a blank check, says, you just fill it out. The cello says, he would not hear of it. Then finally he sold the cello. And he, when the people came to get the cello, he asked for permission to accompany his instrument to the carriage. And then he embraced it, he kissed it, and returned to his house and died.
According to your autobiography, your first cello was a couple of sticks. You said earlier that you felt you almost wanted to play the cello before you were born. You must have been very, very young when you picked up a couple of sticks and imitated the cello.
Well, that's how I started, really. To play the cello, I was too small to really to start to play the cello. But I saw a cello, I heard the cello. And I just pretended that I played cello by taking a long stick and short stick. And
what caught your attention? What caught your interest with a cello?
It was at a concert. My parents brought me to a concert, and I heard and saw the cello for the first time. And it was what you would call love, you know, the first sight.
Love at first sight, I see.
Love at first sight. Of course, the unusual thing happened. You see that I, as ardently, you know, with it today, as I was then. It's an extraordinary instrument, which I'm happy to say become more and more known by general public, because its origin, actually, it was the instruments of kings. Almost in every palace you would see cello standing somewhere in the corner. And it was an instrument for the aristocracy, while fiddle was the instrument for people.
The fiddle?
Fiddle, yes. They were fiddling around in the street and the woods and things. It's like, for instance, Maurice Ravel, a great French composer, said to me once, I played for him a piece that he wrote for the violin. It's called Cigan. And I transcribed it for the cello. And in Paris, before playing it, I wanted to know what the composer thought of it. And I played for him, and he says, well, I prefer it to hear the cellos you play on the violin. I said, well, why didn't you write it for the cello? So because nobody ever saw a gypsy walking in the woods carrying the cello.
So it was played on the cello.
I played it on the cello. Yes.
Your father played the violin, did he not?
Yes.
Or fiddle?
He played violin. Mm. And my brother, too, used to play the violin. And I was never attracted, although, of course, I know I love violin and all instruments, you know, that are capable to make beautiful music, whatever the instrument is.
Your father finally bought you a cello to
finally
play upon.
Yes,
Did he teach you?
Well, at first he tried to teach me, but then of course I had a regular professor with a very big stomach, and who were eating mint all the time. And I saw that he was absolutely wonderful. But one day my father caught me practicing the cello with a pillow on my stomach and with a lot of mint. And so he decided I have to have another professor.
You played professionally at the astounding age of 8 years.
Yes.
This was in what, a nightclub, or?
Well, I could say that I have done professionally and with the cello absolutely everything there is to be done. I really, really come through everything. I played, in, of course, in the orchestras, played in the streets, in the restaurants. I played of chamber music. I composed, make music for the movie. I played also in the silence movie. And then, of course, the main thing that you probably know, that I played mostly was concert, introduced great many new pieces, new performances, and trying to enrich the cello repertoire. And then I was particularly fascinated with the idea to introduce the cello into the country which did not know the cello at all. I have played in cities where they never heard the cello recital before.
Never heard a cello?
No. So I would go in countries like China. I played even in places, Saigon, you know, the Philippines, in Africa. I would go in the places where the people would expect to see crocodiles rather than the cello, you know, because I wanted people to know the instrument and to love it. Mm-hmm. So that actually, perhaps it was a pioneering side of my activity. And then, of course, another thing, I think it was Heine said, the people who don't behave according to their age are fools. So I try to do right thing at the right time. I find right now it would be foolish for me to play everywhere in the world, as I have done for years and years and years, every day in a different place, different concert, different thing like that. So now I think, it is not only now, but already for a number of years, I was always very interested in teaching. And I taught in already when I was in Moscow. When I was in Moscow, I thought that people called me professor, and there were...
You were a very young boy then.
Even then, I began to teach. And I have, of course, all my students were much older than I was. And I continued teaching, even in the busiest period of my career. At the Curtis Institute, I was for 9 years. I practically had no time to teach my students during the winter. I have very few. I would not accept more than maybe 4 or 5. So I would sacrifice my summers. I didn't have vacation. They would come to my place and we would work day and night. And I'm happy to say that I don't know unhappy student of mine, because I think it is hang together all the behavior, the approach, the philosophy of life and making music.
That philosophy of life is an important part of the music.
It's very important, because the people occupy all their life with something very beautiful. You find in music everything you find in on earth or in heaven, you know, and you deal with the great beauty, you know, and so you must become beautiful, a little bit beautiful yourself. You know, you cannot be, you have to have that feeling, you have to lead the life according to your activity, which is a noble one. And there should be healthy too, because in music it is everything involved. It's a total involvement. As I believe it's a combination of the spirit of emotions and of the physics. Mm. And it must coordinate. Mm. And that would make an artist. Only then.
Does it reflect a man's experiences, your own experiences as a youngster in Russia, escaping from Russia into Poland and Warsaw, the years in Berlin? There's a tremendous amount of living that went into your early years.
Well, of course, living, you see, it has been my only teacher, the life itself. I have no time to go to school. I had to work. So the life became my teacher. And the music, of course, it is so. I see it from my class at the USC. If those youngsters, they're coming, you know, from England, Scandinavia, Holland, of course, these countries, you see those magnificent people. So it is my job to keep them healthy. Healthy.
Healthy is important.
Yes. They're healthy physically, they're healthy psychologically, and that they prepare themselves for good life, maybe hard, but good. And it became practically my life. I loved them. I could never, and I'm sure I could never teach a person whom I dislike. How can you teach something wonderful to a person who don't wish anything good?
You sound as though perhaps you never met one you didn't like, however.
No, once I did.
Once
I did, that poor fellow, I just didn't make a good teacher for him. He had to quit.
Mr. Pedagorsky, after the Russian Revolution, while you were still in Russia, before you escaped, you played for a time in the Lenin Quartet,
yes,
which played for Lenin.
What
was your experience in meeting this man?
Well, of course, I was very young at that time. I can't say that I really knew him, but at this particular period, they changed the names of cities, of institutions, and so forth. It was a very big meeting. And everyone was present. Lenin, Trotsky, Lunacharsky, all the bigwigs there. And I was just a kid. I don't know what I was, maybe 12 or something like that. 13, I can't remember.
You were playing in the Bolshoi?
Bolshoi Theater, yes.
Yes.
I was
first cellist.
I was first cellist at Bolshoi Theater. Mm-hmm. And when it came to the quartet, and I was a member of the state string quartet that consisted of the most of the, there were three professors of the Moscow Conservatory and me, the youngster. And then a lady, some tight-lipped fanatic, said that she proposed that state string quartet should be named Lenin String Quartet. My voice, I think, was in the process of changing. I wasn't as quick. Say something, why not Beethoven's String Quartet?
Beethoven. Huh?
Or Stradivari. And somebody hit me under the table very hard. But everyone who received the name of the Lenin was invited to Kremlin to see Lenin separately. So the quartet came there one evening and we played for Lenin or something. And then he asked me to stay. Well, I must say I was not a big hero. I was scared to death. It was a terrible time at that time. And I had a conversation with him. And I must say that I was very much impressed. I didn't see at all in him the great leader, communist leader. He looked like a provincial tailor.
Tailor?
Tailor, yes. Very modest, very unassuming, and couldn't pronounce letter R. So you call me instead of, that's my nickname, Grisha. He would say, Gisha. And then I saw him on two more occasions. But for that matter, sometimes I think I'm perhaps 200 years old. If I think that I knew and pretty well the older brother of Tchaikovsky, that my friends, some of my friends in Germany have been intimate friends of Brahms and Schumann. And staying in the house, I was sleeping in bed where Schumann or Brahms was sleeping, and things like that. I would say even by giving concerts, let's say, with Richard Strauss, or knowing Ravel or Rachmaninoff, and things like that, it makes one sometimes feel that one lived much longer.
You don't feel 200 years old, nor do you feel you've lived that long.
Well, I just honestly don't think that I feel differently than I felt when I was 20. I'm in good health, and I never lost enthusiasm, not only for music, but for the happening. You know, the day is too short for me. And I was always a great believer on people. And I don't know if you will call optimist. I don't think it is maybe the right word. But I think there were never the old good times. I think today is better than it was.
It is better.
Yes, it is better than it was 100 years ago. Maybe, well, there were not as much smog or something like that, but still, and I believe it will be better. This is the only one thing that worries me, what I wish, that the people themselves will be just a little bit nicer. There will be no wars. There will be nothing, just a little bit nice. Not much, not big words. And I think that art can help.
You said that probably the single greatest influence upon your musical life was Furtwängler. When you were with the Berlin, the four seasons you played with the Berlin Philharmonic.
I admired him a great deal. And we were great friends, and I have learned from him very much. But for that matter, I had many teachers, you see. All the great musicians I was fortunate to be associated with, I think I learned from so many, even from my students. If they would know how much I learned from them, they would send me a bill.
How do you feel about the changes that have taken place in music itself, the trends toward what is called contemporary music? It's not the kind of music you usually play.
I actually even don't know what you call, contemporary. Once, I remember I was with Strauss, and a lady came to him, and she asked him precisely the same questions, what he thought of contemporary music, atonal music, and this and that, program music, And he says, my dear lady, I really don't know. I know only two kinds of music, good and bad. I think it is just as good as legitimate to say today. Sometimes I heard music that would appear maybe totally crazy to someone. And yet, I'm not against even the strangest attempts to be new or to bring something new, because I never forget, one should never forget that Mozart never heard even ring of the telephone. You see, just like Leonardo da Vinci never saw the sights that our astronauts saw. The millions of new sounds, of new vistas, you see, of the new thing. So therefore, I think it's very difficult so totally to be fair and to judge, because the people try to utilize something that was not before.
You continue to play chamber music for your own enjoyment with other musicians. What's the particular satisfaction a musician gets from playing with?
Well, it is very nice to see, for instance, tomorrow with my friend Heifetz, you know, we will play chamber music in his house, you know, maybe in a week in my house. There will come friends together and we play music and we enjoy. There's the difference between music and the tailors. You would never see 10 tailors come together, you know, to cut a jacket. But we do because we love it. We enjoy it, we play it.
It's a kind of community, I suppose.
Yes, it is, and it is intimate. It is nice to play in a small room for a few friends. Mm. One feels warm. It's good. It's a pleasure.
You've played for a great many years, more than 60 years, obviously. Do you still find new discoveries in music, or is it all gone
new bad? Discoveries?
Yes. Surprises is what I mean.
Every day.
New surprises every day?
Every day. It's never-ending progress. Process. Can never be, otherwise it will be dull. You know, there's sometimes a piece that I have played hundreds of times, I discover totally new things in it. Or I would discover that I didn't understand it. Something that I misunderstood, something I didn't understand at all. No, it is a never-ending process. Never-ending. And it's good so, because otherwise it would be a routine. It would be a very boring thing. So, and it is not. Thank God.
Thank you very much.
I hope I didn't.